You're listening to Red Eye on Vancouver Cooperative Radio, CFRO 100.5 FM.
The farming township of Mellenton is located north of Toronto on the way to Georgian Bay. In 2006, the Highland companies began knocking on farmhouse doors in the area, buying land and telling farmers of their plan to build a factory potato farm. Backed by a Boston-based $25 billion hedge fund, Highland's plan for a potato farm evolved into a limestone quarry that would be more than 2,300 acres in area and more than 200 feet deep. Six farmers initially refused the million-dollar offers for their property, and those six farm owners became the catalyst for a campaign to protect the area farmland. And on November 21st, the Highland Companies withdrew its quarry application. To talk about that campaign, I'm joined by Carl Kosak, chair of the North Dufferin Agricultural and Community Task Force. Hello, Carl, and welcome to Red Eye.
Yeah, good morning, Sean. Pleasure to be with you.
How did the local residents in Mellenton first learn that Highland was going to build a quarry instead of a potato farm?
Well, in 2006, we knew little about our new neighbor, the Highland Farms, with the exception that, to us in agriculture, it's a fact that big money starts to move into primary production. That's happening right across the country. So when they first bought land and said they wanted to become Ontario's largest producer and processor of potatoes, considering the land that they bought, that was a very believable line. We didn't know much about the Baupost hedge fund supporting them at the time. And the first caution flags really came up when these new neighbors started to drill what they called irrigation wells in places where any other normal farmer would not have put an irrigation well. So 2007 already, the year after they bought most of the land, speculation started, what are they up to? And some of the forward-thinking folks engaged an engineer right from the get-go, Gary Hunter, who then did diligent work and by 2008 had everybody sort of up to speed that this was not about agriculture but about mapping the ground underneath their vast holdings. And from there on, it was sort of an open secret, confirmed when they filed their application in March of 2011.
Yeah, I'm wondering a little about the shift from the potato farm to a quarry. Is there any sort of regulation regarding the building of a quarry in Ontario?
Well, there is legislation governing these sort of applications, and the legislation that covers it in Ontario is called the Aggregate Resources Act. Now, you have to remember that the Act was never written to assume or look down the road to have these multinational companies try to propose project of this nature. So it is somewhat antiquated, and after the application was filed, NDAC and many of the supporting organizations petitioned the provincial government, which has resource jurisdiction, to open up the Aggregate Resources Act review in order to write a better legislation, and the government saw the need and agreed to the need, as well as in this antiquated ARA legislation would not have submitted this particular application to an environmental assessment, which is really hard to understand if you look at all the facts that are part of this application. We asked the provincial government to make this quarry proposal a subject to an environmental assessment, and for the first time in Ontario's history, the government agreed to do that, and we are deeply appreciative of that. Whatever in the end made the Highland companies pull their application, nobody will know except those sitting around the boardroom table. However, all these little different pieces must have clearly sent them a message that this wasn't going to happen.
I don't know much about quarries, but why would a environmental assessment be necessary in this kind of situation?
Well, you and I, we share one thing, and that is I didn't know much about quarries either when I got involved in this. I make my living riding horses, really. So the environmental assessment, when you look at some of the details, and they're all up on our website for those of your listeners who want to learn a little bit more about it, one of the biggest things around this thing was that it would take 2,300 acres of tender vegetable land out of production forever. And in their application, the Highland Companies proposes to the Ontario government, if you give us a license for this, we will commit to pumping 600 million liters of water every day in perpetuity. 600 million liters of water didn't mean a lot to me, Sean, at the time. Couldn't sort of quantify that in my head. Our municipal affairs housing, municipal ministry of housing, of affairs and housing, we asked them and they said that's the equivalent daily consumption of 2.7 million people. So that meant something to me. And for a company to propose a contractual application in perpetuity just was bizarre, to say the very least. And when that much fresh water is involved, you know, Melancton is the highest elevation in southern Ontario, so anything that happens to the water up there will run downhill in four different directions. Absolutely had to be subjected to an environmental assessment, and, you know, we're appreciative of the government that they did as we asked.
Let's turn a little to your campaign. Local issues like this sometimes stay local. How did you spread the word beyond Melancton?
Well, it was never about local issue. NDACA's mission statement is very clear. To stop the mega quarry was one of our two goals. The other one is to change the legislation governing it, so that governing applications, so that communities throughout Ontario would be safeguarded from this. And much to my surprise, you know, there's no doubt, tender vegetable land, these farmers up there, they do a great job. They grow an enormous amount of potatoes and rhubarb and Brussels sprouts and peas. And, you know, we're 90 minutes away from downtown Toronto, and all this fresh grown food is just necessary in the bigger Metro Toronto area. And people in the city realized that and came out by the thousands to support this call, because they knew it wasn't just about a local area, but it was really affecting the well-being of the greater Toronto area as well. And that legislative change is part of that mission.
How about the First Nations groups? Were any of them affected or involved in this campaign?
Well, First Nations groups are affected everywhere, you know, and I don't know really how to communicate the incredibly deep appreciation that I have for them. For me, the biggest brother that I have within the First Nations has to be Danny Beaton, who is a Mohawk of the Turtle Clan, who has taught me so much. And, you know, I'm a guy in my 50s. I don't know how old Danny is. It was sort of funny when we first met, because we looked at each other and I was thinking, gee, a cowboy and an Indian, how is this going to work? And he was thinking, an Indian and a cowboy, how is this going to work? And yet we're brothers, truly connected by the spirit of protecting Mother Earth and the sacred part of the water, and just delighted. And one of the key lessons I learned from Danny is don't fight the mega quarry, you know, fight for food and water. And that made this all so easy, because nobody can argue with it, and you can get out of bed with a tremendous amount of positive attitude rather than negative attitude. And the campaign strategy, which is just truly built on the very fundamentals of life, that food and water has to govern government policy first, food and water first, resonates with everybody.
And you carried the campaign to Toronto. Obviously, that's a huge, Canada's biggest metropolis. What was the reaction like in the city of Toronto?
Well, Toronto, you know, you would think everybody is so busy in their daily lives, and I know that they are, yet they embraced the food and water first issue very simply. Even so, Toronto doesn't take its water from this area. It takes it out of Lake Ontario. But being the big metropolitan that it is, it also realizes it has a responsibility to the rural countryside that surrounds it, and they brought that to full swing. There is a tremendous amount of capacity was brought to this through the Canadian Chefs Congress. We had chefs support this movement full well, helping us verbalize that food is just so important. They did great fundraisers for this and awareness raisers. The first one was called Food Stock Up on the Farms that did not sell. It drew 28,000 people out of the city on a cold October day in 2011. And then the Canadian Chefs Congress and the David Suzuki Foundation hosted Soup Stock in the city just this past October, drawing 40,000 people, sending a very clear message that people who have the votes are also very much engaged in protecting their food and water.
Now that the Ontario government has ordered an environmental assessment, Carl, where do things go from here?
Well, the CORI application has been withdrawn. Even so, I learned today, we just had our first board meeting since November 21st, that technically it might not have been withdrawn, but it is withdrawn for all intended purposes. So we move forward with changing the legislation and changing the provincial policy statement to reflect the wishes of Ontario.
And you see the legislation changing then?
Yeah, there's no doubt the review for the Aggregate Resources Act is open and has received tremendous input from a public, solutions-oriented, moving forward, and the same goes for the provincial policy statement, which comes under review every 5 years. The comment period closed November 23rd, and the message is very clear to decision-makers. And you have to understand, Sean, this was never anything to do with fighting aggregate. Everybody understands we need aggregate to push our economies forward. This was just about bad planning, and we're going to continue on that path for sure.
Well, Carl, it's an inspiring story, and we'll continue to follow it. Thanks so much for joining us today.
Well, I'd be delighted to do this again when there's an update or whichever way we can. Thank you so much, John.
Thanks so much, Carl. That was Carl Kosak, chair of the North Dufferin Agricultural and Community Task Force.